KPCC Podcast, supported by Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting the sweeping epic Dunkirk, now nominated for 8 Academy Awards, including Best Picture and Best Director. Starring Kenneth Branagh, Mark Rylance, Cillian Murphy, Tom Hardy, and Ben Whitehead.
It's Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Such a pleasure to have you with us. Joined this week by film critics Christy Lemire of RogerEbert.com and co-host of YouTube's What the Flick, Charles Solomon, animation critic of Animation Scoop and Animation Magazine, and Tim Cogshell of Alt Film Guide and Cinegods.com. We begin with Black Panther. Huge advance ticket purchases, well on its way to a record-making weekend at the North American box office. Black Panther stars Chadwick Boseman as Marvel superhero, Ryan Coogler, the director and co-screenwriter. Tim, let's start with you. What'd you think of Black Panther?
Well, it's an outstanding film. It's an outstanding film, and for all of the reasons that Marvel films are usually outstanding, it hits all of those spots, all the bells and whistles. A nice story with lots of action, great heroes and all of that. But this film is so much better than just that for other reasons. But I want to talk about that stuff first. So this is a really, really good looking film. T'Challa, the king of Wakanda, fictional land in Africa, is the Black Panther. And we met him, of course, in a previous film. So we're not really meeting him in this film. He's already a character that we know, which I think is good.
Did Boseman play the character in the earlier films?
Yes, he did. Chadwick Boseman plays T'Challa. And, you know, I got to tell you, Larry, so coming up in the 60s, this was created in 1966, Jack Kirby, Stan Lee. Interestingly, just a little bit before the Black Panther Party, which was also founded in 1966, a little bit later in the year. They're not connected, but it's an interesting thing. I got to tell you, when I was a kid coming up, didn't too much pay attention to the Black Panther series. He was from Africa, a fictional land in Africa, you know, and you know, I was a brother from St. Louis, you know, I was Luke Cage kind of guy. But this was cool. And then there was a moment in the 70s when we all kind of went African. We were in dashikis and froze. And that's when I started paying attention to the Black Panther. And it was a good series, and I liked it a lot. But it was never that big of a series, even among black people.
And how you have a sense of sort of its heyday, how long the comics were being published?
The comics really never went away. But its heyday would be in the middle 70s.
Okay.
Which is when I sort of came. That Superfly period of the black exploitation. Yeah. Everything black was sort of happening then. And the Black Panther was there. So to have this series come back with such intention, and its intentions are so much more than just the Marvel comic book graphic novel intentions. This movie is talking about black folks today. And what I like most about this movie is that it's really concerned with black folks without being against white folks. There are only two white people in this movie, basically.
Are they like the white people we see in Blaxploitation? where they're both maniacally, you know, geniuses but idiots at the same time.
It's an interesting
Andy
thing.
Andy Serkis is busy chewing the scenery.
Oh, he plays it's a character from a previous film too, and he plays him like a raving loon. And it's fabulous. He's a bad guy. And then you have Martin Freeman, who's also a character from a previous movie, CIA agent that he's playing. And, you know, he's a foil. He's the sidekick. He's the guy that every black actor who's ever played next to a white superhero, he's that guy. And God bless Martin. He's a sport. He takes it all. But he's heroic. But this movie is not really thinking about these two guys. This movie is thinking about black folks and their internecine issues. And that's the thing that I love about Black Panther.
And we'll get back to more of your thoughts on it. Christy, what did you think of Black Panther?
So it's thrilling, and it does so much so well all at the same time, because it is a giant Marvel blockbuster with all the bells and whistles, as you say, Tim. And it does have to function as part of this giant Marvel cinematic universe. And yet, because you have Ryan Coogler here as the director, as one of the writers, he brings to it this independent film sense of character development, of substance, and the beats it hits and the rhythm it finds is totally unlike any other film we've seen yet from Marvel. Yes, we have seen this character previously in Captain America Civil War, but this is really, I mean, this feels like a very much a standalone film. You don't need to have seen the other ones. You don't need to know about Infinity Stones or Baby Groot or anything to understand it and really get into it. So it's very immersive and accessible in that way, and it's gorgeous. Rachel Morrison, I want to mention, she's a cinematographer. She shot Mudbound. She is the first woman ever nominated for an Academy Award for cinematography. She shot this too. Mm-hmm. I want to mention Ruth E. Carter did the costumes, not just the incredibly high-tech Black Panther costume, but also just the wardrobe on the women and the warriors, and just their dresses are so cool, high-tech yet simplistic. And this one thing I love about this movie in general, the women are really, really powerful. Angela Bassett, Danai Gurira as the general, Letitia Wright as his sister, and Lupita Nyong'o, of course, who can do everything. She plays a spy who has a past with him. So yeah, the movie's called Black Panther, but to me, the women are really even stronger.
Well, you mentioned the cinematographer, the Oscar nominee. I mean, that's quite a range from Mudbound to something effects-laden like a Marvel superhero film. Different kind of movie.
And Ryan Coogler can do all that, and he brings all those folks with those, you know, that balance with them too. So yeah, it's thrilling. If you're bringing kids, it is pretty intense and pretty violent. I brought my son, who is 8, who has seen like every Marvel movie, so he wasn't in any way disturbed. But there are some pretty brutal, violent fight scenes. They are very much germane to T'Challa's journey. They're not gratuitous. But yeah, I was really dazzled by how much it does so well.
It is rated PG-13. We're talking about Black Panther. Charles, what do you think?
Well, I think Michael B. Jordan kind of walks away with the movie as the villain.
Indeed.
He was so good in the Rocky remake. He's so good here.
Yeah,
he
was dynamite in the Rocky film. Yeah.
He's drop-dead handsome. He's charismatic. He has great chops as an actor. I would have actually rather preferred to see him as the hero and think, okay, now I'm going to get to see him put on his Panther suit and get in some more action. I had a couple questions about the movie. I don't think all of the action sequences are staged or shot as well as they might be. Particularly, there's a big opening fight in a casino in Korea that is very hard to follow who's where and what they're doing. It's just chopped up in odd ways that I think make it hard to follow. Also, a lot of the plot seems to me to kind of borrow from Lion King, where the main character is Simba. The woman he has the past with feels like Nala, who's teasing him the way they did. He sees his father in the afterlife. He's got a wicked uncle. He's got the wise mother overseeing it all. It felt a little bit familiar in places, but they're correct. It's, you know, a stunning in terms of a vision that we just haven't seen before and characters we haven't seen before.
We're talking about the Marvel film Black Panther. Tim?
You know, it's interesting because when it comes to these, I'm such a Fairweather fanboy when it comes to these movies. I really am. I mean, I'll stab one out just as quickly as I'll love one, you know. And I've been back and forth on these films. The good ones, Logan. Outstanding.
Yeah, what a terrific, you know, very violent.
Very violent.
But a really
deeply emotional film.
Yeah.
That film got a tear out of me. The first Guardians of the Galaxy film. There are a few of them that do what they do. Now, if this film did all of the things that those films did that way, it would still be a good movie. A perfectly serviceable Marvel action film. But because it has this underlying thing going on in it, right? To me, that just elevates it so much more. These young Black men, these Black people who are all thinking about the way we have been interacting as a nation of Black people, a world of Black people over the course of history. That's what they're talking about in this movie. Michael B. Jordan's character is mad because that Black king hasn't been helping his people, all of his people. He's mad about that. He ain't wrong about that. You know, Nat Turner was mad about that.
Yeah,
John Brown was mad about that.
He
they
says something about
either.
There are like 2 billion of us, 2 billion people who look like us in the world, and what have you done for any of them?
You know, and that's an underlying narrative here. Ta-Nehisi Coates rebooted the Black Panther graphic novel series, and in that series, he brings into question the notion of why do we need kings? Maybe the time of kings has passed; they haven't helped. And this one takes that a notion further. If you are going to be the king, then what good are you? What good are you? So I like that a lot. It's really heavy stuff.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned how great Michael B. Jordan is in this. And he was excellent in Fruitvale Station, too, which is Ryan Coogler's first film. But you're right, Tim. His motivation makes absolute sense. And he believes that he should ascend the throne. And so many times in big action movies, it's just, I want to rule the world. I am hell-bent on global domination. And it's so generic and so unformed. And this makes absolute sense. And so he's a villain, but you kind of understand where he's coming from.
Oh, he's also a villain he's also a villain with an arc that he doesn't start out so monomaniacal, but he's also a very intelligent villain, which is a nice switch. When you first see him, you realize, oh, this guy, you know, the, hits you the way sometimes Don Cheadle does with, oh, this is somebody who's got a mind you've got to watch out for.
Also, we should mention really that Daniel Kaluuya is in this, too, just to say what a deep bench we have here. Oscar-nominated Daniel Kaluuya, and he is great in it, too. He also has an arc. He evolves for better or for worse. So,
speaking of Oscar-nominated, we have our Film Week Oscar show coming up, Theater at Ace Hotel, Sunday afternoon, February 25th, 1 o'clock. Tickets available, kpcc.org/in-person. And speaking of Black Panther, Tim is going to come back next week on Air Talk, and we're going to open up the phones. I really want to hear from African-American Air Talk listeners who've seen the movie. If you're going to see it this weekend in the next few days, as tens or hundreds of thousands of people are going to see it, I want to hear your thoughts about what it means to you to see the film. That's coming up next week on Air Talk. Tim will be with me. Black Panther rated PG-13 in its opening Thursday night. $25 million just in its preview screenings, expected to have a huge weekend at the box office. Ryan Coogler, the director and co-screenwriter, Chadwick Boseman stars. Early Man is from Aardman Studios, the studio that gave us the wonderful Wallace and Gromit and Chicken Run. Eddie Redmayne's voice stars in Early Man. Mick Park, the director, co-written by Mark Burton and James Higginson. Charles?
Well, I mean, it's not exactly news that Nick Park is one of the great animators and directors of our era. You know, he proved that stop-motion animation could be alive in ways no one had ever seen before. When in Creature Comforts, his first Oscar, the Brazilian jaguar is talking about, you don't have a space. Suddenly this character was alive, and Wallace and Gromit are as alive as anyone you see on the screen. And so a new film from him is always welcome, and this is, for want of a better word, a hoot. It's a spoof of sports movies, of caveman movies, and all the cliches thereof. The main character, Doug, may not be the sharpest flint in his cavern, but he's well-intentioned and he means well. And the Stone Age way of life is threatened by a lot of nasty, effete Bronze Age warriors who speak in, for want of a better description, Monty Python French accents. And Nick told me, he said, look, in England, we love soccer, but we're not very good at it. You know, we haven't won a World Cup since like 1966, but we dream of it. And so Doug realizes these people have to relearn their ancient game that's an ancestor of soccer to defeat the nasty Bronze Age characters and keep their home valley safe.
Now, why couldn't they come up with an original story, Charles?
It's full of Nick's puns and word plays and jokes that we all, you know, have come to love. At one point, when Doug stumbles into the Bronze Age settlement, he sees that they have a knife that can cut bread, and he says, why, that's the greatest invention since ever. And it's, you know, that kind of silliness that we love and that kind of acting that he can get out of a clay character, that Eddie Redmayne is a good voice as this sort of befuddled, well-intended little man, but his gestures and his expressions all go with and to create a performance.
What do you think, Christy?
So it's not peak Aardman. You know, we go into an Aardman movie, as you say, with great expectations. And I have such an appreciation for the fact that it truly is stop motion animation. Like, it's painstaking to the extent that you can see thumbprints on the clay. And that
Love
part's really
that.
Cool. And this one looks even more rough hewn than, I would say, even Curse of the Were-Rabbit. Because, and that makes sense thematically with what the time period is and what the subject matter is. It is cute. It is entertaining throughout. I smiled a lot and laughed a lot throughout at the puns, at the wordplay, the little details that you get rewarded for paying attention to. And Nick Park himself voices, sort of grunts, the character of Hognob, this boar who is kind of, he's the Gromit figure in this.
Very much.
And, you know, he's sort of the cute little sidekick. Yeah, it's an underdog sports movie, but it's entertaining the whole way through.
And I love that it is an original story. I mean, Charles, week after week with these animated films, you know about how they're just all repeating the same. So, obviously, we've never heard this plot before.
No, there's also a nice little homage to Ray Harryhausen in the opening.
To the skeletons era?
No, to it. It's a dinosaur fight.
Oh, great.
That they
oh,
deliberately
it.
Slowed down and downgraded the footage so it looks like 1966.
Oh, that's great. Early Man, the animated film we're talking about, from director Nick Park of Aardman Studios, did Wallace and Gromit, Chicken Run, Curse of the Were-Rabbit. It's rated PG, and it's in wide release. Nice that we have two good films to talk about right out of the gate on Film Week. Later this hour, we're going to talk about the five nominees for Best Foreign Language Film. That's not part of our special Oscar show at the Theater at Ace Hotel. We're going to hear what our critics think about the foreign language films coming up. Back in a minute. You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. Comes your way every Saturday at noon, Friday live at 11 o'clock, right here on 89.3. One of the wide releases out this week, the faith-based film Samson, is rated PG-13 but did not screen for critics, so we can't give you our critics' impressions of it, but they did see Double Lover, which is a French thriller. The movie is written and directed by Francois Ozon. It's based on a Joyce Carol Oates novel, Double Lover. Tim, what'd you think?
Yeah, the lives of twins, that Joyce Carol Oates novel, mid-80s Joyce Carol Oates. A neat book. This movie is better. And this is a really good movie, I think, performance-wise and story-wise. So what we have is this young woman. She seems a bit fragile when we first meet her in this very complicated series of opening cinematography. We see her getting her hair cut and a few other things. And then she goes to visit this therapist. And she sits down and she more or less explains who she is and what's going on with her to the therapist. And it all sort of results in these stomach pains that she's having. And the movie presses on from there. And you sort of wonder what kind of movie you're in. When the movie is over, you still wonder what kind of movie have I been in. But what you have experienced is a really taut and thrilling little movie where you're always questioning what's true and what's not, what's in anybody's head, what's in her head, what's real, who is real. I don't know that it holds together all the way through, but it certainly had me pinned to my chair for the entire time. And it's really sexy, too.
Double Lover, the film, Christy?
This movie is nutty, and I dug it. It is impeccably crafted guilty pleasure material. It is beautiful. I mean, Francois Ozon is a visual stylist, certainly, and he does do these sexy kind of tense thrillers.
Swimming pool.
Yeah, swimming yeah. pool.
This is his kind of thing.
Yeah, and you see the influences. I mean, there's a lot of Hitchcock here. There's a lot of De Palma here. There is some Cronenbergian body horror toward the end. And yeah, you don't know what's real and what's not, but you are always hooked and you never know where it is going. And Jeremy Renier plays a really different kind of role here. I think of him mostly from the Dardenne films, and he often plays like a working class guy, you know, having a tough time, down in his luck. Here he plays two different kinds of very slick intellectual, and they are twins, and you don't know who is really who all the time because we're seeing it through her very unreliable and skewed perspective. And Maureen Vacht, who is the actress in this, is like sort of like a young Juliette Binoche thing. There's something kind of feline.
Even a young Jackie
her.
Bisset, which is interesting because Jackie Bisset shows up later in the film.
Yes, and beautifully shot. There's some cool stuff with, I mean, very precise symmetry and some really like entrancing giant circular staircases and mirrors, and it's all toying with your head, and it's fun.
Yeah.
The movie is Double Lover, the French thriller. You can see it at Lemley's Royal Theater in West L.A., Lemley's Playhouse Pasadena, the AMC Rolling Hills, AMC Burbank, and Edwards West Park. The movie's unrated, written and directed by Francois Ozon. Golden Exits, drama starring Emily Browning, Adam Horovitz, and Chloe Sevigny. It's written and directed by Alex Ross Perry. Christy?
So Alex Ross Perry makes these movies about people in which he examines them in really cold ways and sees them for their flaws and exposes them for their human frailty and their foibles. And that is very much true here as well in what appears to be this, you know, kind of perfect leafy Brooklyn neighborhood. Adam Horovitz from the Beastie Boys, of course, who is also really great. And did you ever see While We're Young? Noah Baumbach film.
Yeah,
he was really good in that. He has a supporting role in that. Now he is the star here. He and Chloe Sevigny are married to each other, but not totally happily, and that's clear from the beginning. Mary Louise Parker is her sister, and he is inviting into his world this beautiful young 20-something student played by Emily Browning, and she is in New York from Australia to study with him. He is an archivist, and that entails working in this little basement office for hours and hours at a time, and you realize that she's insinuating herself in their lives, whether she intends to or not. And then she has a whole other friendship with Jason Schwartzman, who is a friend of her mom's. And she insinuates herself in that life as well. And both those lives end up being entwined. And it's about how you never really know anybody. Mm. You can never really trust anybody.
And the perch, the perch of perspective, because she has this perspective on all of these people. Because Jason Schwartzman's character is related to the other characters, and she can sort of see all of these people and how they relate to each other. All of them talk to her, and they tell her things that they're thinking about the other people. So, of course, we're with her, and she's this young and incredibly beautiful girl, and she knows it, and she knows what that means, particularly in the context in her relationship to these men. But she knows what it means in relationship to their wives too, or their girlfriends, right? And she manipulates it a little bit, but she's not trying to break anything, and that's what I like about this. She's not trying to break anything. She's trying to make sure nothing gets broke. She wants to do her job, get paid, have some fun in New York, and go home. But she realizes she has to negotiate this very, very meticulously because men are fragile. And she really is. I'm trying not to break you, guy. And she's trying with all her heart.
Yet.
Yeah, you know. And he made this film called Listen Up, Philip. Also,
yeah.
Jason Schwartzman. Mm-hmm. And you have to say it like this: Listen up, Philip, because that's what's going on in the film. And you're right. He's so astute. Mm-hmm. Interesting that he is one of the co-writers of another movie we're going to talk about.
This is much more insightful. But yeah, I'm not sure that Emily Browning is all that innocent in this. I think she's kind of insidious
not
in the
innocent.
Way that she does manipulate both marriages and pretends that, I don't know what I'm doing. But she is definitely using her sexuality and her youth and her beauty just for fun. Who knows, for sport?
Mm,
passive-aggressively for the heck of
That's
it? I don't know.
Yeah. I thought that she was trying to be kind.
I
thought that she was like, this happens.
I gotta see this movie.
Every place I go, this happens. And I'm going to try not to destroy you people.
What, me? Golden Exits, the film, written and directed by Alex Ross Perry. The drama is rated R. It's at Lemley's Monica Film Center in Santa Monica. The Party, a British comedy drama that's written and directed by Sally Potter. It stars Kristen Scott Thomas and Timothy Spall. Christy, what'd you think of The Party?
I'm really mixed on this movie, and it's very divisive. People either love it or they hate it, and I happen to be somewhere in the middle. It is not as sharp as it aims to be, but it's not as deathly dull as its detractors might suggest that it is. So it's a classic kind of drawing room comedy. You have this room full of people. They are there for a party. Kristen Scott Thomas, we learned at the beginning, has just been elected to some important political role in British Parliament. We don't know till closer to the end what that is, but everyone's calling her. They're all coming over to celebrate. It is shot in very crisp black and white. And one by one, the doorbell rings and folks come over and everyone's got a role in their lives. And then as the evening wears on, secrets get exposed and resentments boil to the surface. And
it sounds like a play.
It feels like a play, for better and for worse. They're all pretty much trapped in like two rooms, in the living room, in the kitchen, and then part of the backyard. And I would say that the characters are not necessarily drawn well enough to merit us being engaged in the ins and outs of their lives for what feels like a lot longer than this film's 71-minute running time. Patricia Clarkson is withering as her best friend. She gets all the best zingers. If you're going to see it, I would say see it for her. But there are so many twists and turns, and I guess it's meant to be a comment on post-Brexit in terms of the political situation there, and like, is this really who we're now electing? I don't know. What do you think she meant by this, Sally Potter? Because I can't tell.
Just Sally Potter for Orlando, and all these little things. You know, only in that it is a dark comedy, does this movie sustain itself, because it's all these diatribes. subjects, politics, homosexuality, pregnancy, infertility, death and life.
Infidelity.
Infidelity. You know, and they have their cordoned off in all their little sections. And we're going to talk about this and yell and scream about it. But every now and again, somebody says something so damn funny that it just made me laugh, particularly Patricia and Cherry Jones, too, because, you know, Cherry Jones is Cherry Jones.
Yeah.
And every now and again, they'll just take out the knives and just cut each other so deep that it makes you giggle. But would I want to know any of these people? Would I would if I walked into this house with these? I'm
You'd leave
out of
the
here.
Party.
You people have a nice time, but that's what sustains it—a little biting humor. But as a movie, no, I don't think so.
Not much to it.
This sounds like something Mike Lee would have done much better back in the period of High Hopes.
Oh, when he stood David Thewlis outside that department store, screaming and yelling at everybody. Yeah. That was fantastic.
And Carnage did this better. You know, there are a lot of really sharp movies that can have that really dark comedy that has some truth to it, and I don't know what the truth is she's trying to find here.
Sally Potter, the writer and director of The Party, the British comedy dramas at the Landmark Theater in West LA. It's rated R. You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPECC. This week, our critics are Tim Cogshell, Christy Lemire, and Charles Solomon. Next up, the thriller Looking Glass, starring Nicolas Cage and Robin Tunney. Tim Hunter directed, and it's written by Jerry Rapp and Matthew Wilder. Christy.
This is an awesome Nicolas Cage movie in only the way that Nicolas Cage movies can be awesome. This is him just reveling in his B-movie persona. He knows who he is, he knows what we want to see, and this is that. And so if that's your particular cup of tea, awesome, go see Looking Glass. It is really terrible, and you know that from like the first second you see Nicolas Cage, because he has awful fake dark hair and a fake dark beard, and he's driving his truck and he's smoking his cigarette and looking anxious, and you just know that like nothing good's gonna happen from that point on. But the reason that he and Robin Tunney as his wife are in this truck is because they are trying to start over in their lives. They've had a family tragedy that is briefly alluded to at the beginning. They buy this motel in the middle of nowhere in the Arizona desert, and weird things happen and weird people show up, and he realizes that there is more there than he bargained for when he bought the place.
Sounds
including
like a Twilight Zone
episode.
Yeah,
well, if only like the twists were that cool or clever. But there's a secret room, kind of like in that documentary Voyeur, right? There's a secret room in the motel that allows him to spy on one
about
particular
Gay
room.
Talese, yeah.
Yeah, and so he could, you know, there was a motel where you could spy on the rooms. He finds a room and he spies on people and he sees more than he bargained for. And it's got a lot of David Lynch references. I mean,
It does sound fun.
It kind of looks like Lost Highway in the beginning. You got a two-lane road in the middle of nowhere, this Nicolas Cage. It's fun and nutty and doesn't really add up to much. But if you want to see Nicolas Cage just freaking out, this is your movie.
Looking Glass is at the Vintage Los Feliz. It's rated R. The drama Nostalgia stars Ellen Burstyn and John Hamm, Kathleen Keener and Bruce Dern in the cast. Mark Pellington is the director and co-screenwriter with, name we heard earlier, Alex Ross Perry. Tim, can you get us started? Just give us like a quick 45 seconds. We'll pick it up after the break.
Yeah, it's a series of vignettes loosely tied together in various different ways. Basically, looking at the subject of loss, loss of life, loss of objects, loved ones, separation, and things like that. The through line happens to be an insurance adjuster or appraiser, I think he is. And he's going to these people's homes, someone who's lost a parent, someone who's had a fire, whatever it is. And he's appraising things, and he's talking to these people. And it sort of moves on from there with this sort of loose through line through all of these vignettes. It's a very, 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 very heavy film, a heavy drama. And I think that most of that comes from the director and co-writer, Mark Pellington, who has been around forever, Arlington Road up to Henry Poole. And I don't know. This didn't work for me.
Well, let's hold and hear what Christy thought about Nostalgia. Nostalgia, the R-rated film, Mark Pellington, the director and co-screenwriter. We have more movies to talk about, including the 5 nominees for Best Foreign Language Oscar. That's not something that we have a chance to talk about at our Film Week Academy Awards preview at the theater at Ace Hotel. We're going to do the foreign language films coming up right after this update.
Hey, Film Week listeners, my name's Annie Gilbertson, and I'm the investigative reporter here at KPCC. I'm also the host of our new podcast, Repeat. The story starts with a string of officer shootings in South L.A.
I had no freeze, no nothing. I just heard shots.
The men shot were all criminals. The shooters, all sheriff's deputies. Law enforcement said each of the shootings was justified. But did it happen the way officers said it did? Subscribe to Repeat from KPCC, an Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen.
KPCC Podcasts, supported by Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting the sweeping epic Dunkirk, now nominated for 8 Academy Awards, including Best Picture and Best Director. AFI said Christopher Nolan's deconstructed narrative is so viscerally immersive, so creatively meticulous, and so proudly poetic that it elevates the art of storytelling to a priceless personal experience. Dunkirk, for consideration in all categories.
It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. Great to have you with us, whether you're listening to the podcast. If you're not, subscribe to it. It'll be right there for you every single week, the full hour version of the program. You can also hear it every Friday live at 11 and Saturday at noon here on 89.3 KPCC. Our critics today, who are three of the panel of critics joining us Sunday afternoon, February 25th, Theater Ace Hotel. Today, Tim Cogshell, Charles Solomon, Christy Lemire, but they and their colleagues will be at Theater at Ace Hotel Sunday afternoon, February 25th, 1 o'clock. Tickets available. The beautiful, historic, what began life as United Artists flagship theater on South Broadway, downtown Los Angeles. We'll talk about the major Oscar categories, show clips from the Oscar-nominated films. Just a great chance for you to join with your fellow Film Week lovers. Be in a whole theater, 1,600-seat theater, full of people who love movies like you do. Get your tickets now, kpcc.org/in-person. So we're hearing from Christy and Tim about the drama Nostalgia, starring Ellen Burstyn. Great to see her in a film that's out. John Hamm, Catherine Keener, Bruce Dern, Mark Pellington, the director. Christy, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's a slog, and I feel bad trashing this movie, but it is just so heavy-handed and so self-serious, and it comes from a place of great earnestness on the part of this director. Mark Pellington has talked about how he was inspired to explore themes of death and memory after the death of his wife and his mom within a couple of years, about a decade ago. And so it's a very, very personal film for him. And, you know, it's, one story leads to another, It's this great cast, as you mentioned. It's just there's this demand, or there's this expectation, rather, that we're going to experience great emotional catharsis along with these people. But it bops from one to another and doesn't spend enough time with any of them for us to be invested like that. And the tone, it's so monotone. There's really no great variance, you know, beyond just sadness. And it's just somber, and the way it's lighted and the music. There are a couple of blasts of life with Catherine Keener and John Hamm as brother and sister teasing each other still after all these years. But it's just unbearably sad.
Quick thought on it, Tim.
The performances. The individual performances of these actors are good. Wonderful. They're really delivering, digging deep. But it wants us to go down there with them. And it's too much.
Nostalgia is the film, the drama rated R. You can see it at the Landmark in West L.A. The Monkey King 3, third installment in that franchise based on the novel Journey to the West, a Hong Kong action fantasy film directed by Pu Soi Cheng, and it's written by Ning Wen. Charles, what'd you think of Monkey King 3?
Well, the Monkey King is one of the most beloved characters in much of Asian cultures. There are endless variations and films. There was a CG film about Monkey King last year. Even Dragon Ball started as a riff on the Journey to the West. This can't decide if it is an action adventure, if it's a romance, if it's a musical, or if it's a slapstick comedy. And it keeps trying to do different things, not terribly successfully. The theme of the Journey to the West is, after all his outrageous antics, which upset even the Jade Emperor of Heaven, Monkey is tamed by a monk, and he and Pigsy and a rather vague third character All are going to the West, which is to India, to find the sutras of Buddhism to bring back to ease the suffering of all sentient beings. In this case, they've added an adventure where they blunder into the sort of Amazon kingdom.
Woman land.
Yes, woman land. And the monk and the queen fall in love and have this endless, dreary musical number about, oh, if not in this life, then in the next life we can be together. Whereas the whole point of the monk's mission is to bring enlightenment to sentient creatures so that you don't have any more pattern of desire and rebirth. So it's a little
contradicts
bit...
contradicts
yes,
itself.
It's kind of like having a pope who's into voodoo turn up in something. Clearly, the people have learned special effects. There's some dazzling water effects. There are mountains and waterfalls and explosions, and but it just doesn't add up to anything.
That is the quote of the show, though.
Like, I'm open to voodoo.
That opening sequence with the water god, with the monkey king,
and the river god,
with the river god. That's a lovely sequence. It's very exciting. I like this better than the first Monkey King movie, and less than the second Monkey King, the 3D one from last year. You know, Donnie Yen is in that first one, but, you know, interesting.
Aaron Kwok stars in this one. The Monkey King 3 is unrated. You can see it at the AMC Atlantic Times Square in Monterey Park, AMC Puente Hills, and the AMC in Orange. And we're going to take just a moment on Poop Talk, the comedy documentary. Aaron Feldman directing. Christy?
This is barely a movie. This is a bunch of comedians, and it's a really impressive array of comedians they've assembled here.
All-star comedians.
Kumail Nanjiani, Adam Carolla, Rob Corddry, Paul Scheer, Nikki Glaser, Eric Stone Street, Randy and Jason Sklar are in it, and they are also producers of it. And basically, it's a bunch of comedians and actors riffing on poop and why there is a stigma attached to pooping in America, or, you know, if you're a man or a woman, and they look at it from different cultural perspectives. How is poop regarded in India? How is it regarded in Korea? And there are a couple of funny anecdotes here and there. I guess if you think that poop humor is hilarious, you're going to be with it. This movie, again, barely a movie, like 68 minutes long.
It's a very specialized audience.
Yes. I don't know that I would see this in a theater.
Poop Talk is the comedic documentary, and it's unrated. You can see it Lemley's Monica Film Center if you do want to experience it in a theater. Now we turn our attention to the 5 nominees for Best Foreign Language Oscar. And we begin with a movie that is being released this week. Loveless is the film. It's the Russian nominee for Best Foreign Language. Unlike the Winter Olympic Games, they're not disqualified. Mm-hmm. There's no doping alleged in the making of Loveless. What'd you think about the film, Christy?
It's devastating. This was my favorite foreign film of last year. This is what I voted for our LA Film Critics voting for Best Foreign Language Film. It is about a couple, and they are going through a very ugly divorce, and their young son is caught in the middle of it. And they are, the husband and wife, or soon to be ex-husband and wife, are so caught up in their own anger and their own selfish needs that they don't realize that one day the kid just disappears. And it is devastating. It is so sad, but in a deeply resonant emotional way, whether you're a parent or not. And it is shot so beautifully. This director will hold a shot, and it's entrancing, of just like the snow and the trees and a creek. And he really sets a rich sense of mood and place here. And yeah, I love this movie.
As a parent, was it hard to sit?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you want to think, I'd never just let my kid wander off. I'd know if he was gone for 2 days. So yeah, and you do get a little judgy, like, I'd know. Come on. But yeah, it's very hard to watch.
And what do you think of
Loveless? Well, the same as Christy. And it is an extremely difficult movie. And the thing of it is, the first time I watched this movie, because I revisited it for this little conversation here, I had this particular opinion about these parents, and scorn for both of them. The second time I watched this movie, my scorn for her was relieved. I'm not as angry as her as I am at him.
Mom?
It's his fault.
I'm glad you can see that, Tim.
You know, because the way the movie's laid out, they're both doing fairly terrible things, ultimately. But no, you can see, second time through, it was very clear, no, you did this. And maybe he even suffers the most for it. Maybe.
but a powerful film.
Oh, yes, yes.
We're talking about the movie Loveless. It's Russia's entry for Best Foreign Language Oscar, and it is one of the five finalists. The movie's rated R. You can see it at Lemley's Royal Theater in West Los Angeles. Andrei Zvaginsev is the director and the co-screenwriter of the film. Mariana Spivak and Matvey Novikov are the stars of the film. Once again, it's rated R. Coming up, we're going to hear about the other four Best Foreign Language nominees on Body and Soul, a Hungarian drama. Also, The Square, which we had talked about earlier, a Swedish comedy drama, The Insult from Lebanon, and A Fantastic Woman, Chilean film. Those are the Best Foreign Language nominees, and all of them are available to be seen either streaming services or at local movie theaters. We'll tell you specifically where as we continue. You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. We'll be back in just 1 minute. Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. Sure hope to see you coming up Sunday afternoon, February 25th, 1 o'clock, Theater at Ace Hotel, 16th Annual Film Week Academy Awards preview with all of our critics there on stage. We'll see clips from the Oscar-nominated films. Tickets available at kpcc.org/in-person. One category that we don't do on the Oscar shows, just because of time limitations, is Best Foreign Language Film. We're doing it today on our Film Week program. We've already heard what our critics thought of the Russian film Loveless, which they absolutely love, as difficult as it is to watch that drama. Also Oscar-nominated, movie that's now streaming on Netflix, On Body and Soul, a Hungarian drama about two slaughterhouse workers. The film is written and directed by Ildikó Enyedi. What do you think of it, Tim?
This is outstanding. The slaughterhouse stuff is tough but purposeful. And sometimes when I'm forced to watch things like that, because we watch what happens in the slaughterhouse, it's mostly cattle that they're working with. And she's very particular about showing us that stuff. And in my gut, I always think to myself, you had better earn this if you make me watch this. That's the way I am with filmmakers. Yeah. If you hurt me, you better earn it. She earns it. This is about this man and this woman. They work at this slaughterhouse. She is a woman who plainly has some sort of a socialization disorder. Anybody paying attention would be able to see that when you first meet her. Sort of lovely, but doesn't move much in a flat affect. He's a man that has an injured arm, and he's sort of running things. I think he's the financial director. He's very thoughtful. And seems to know everyone who works at the plant very well, who they are and what their nature is. He goes home and goes to sleep. She goes home and goes to sleep. They dream these dreams. It turns out that they're dreaming the same dream. And then, Christy?
Well, how they find out is kind of interesting, because there's a robbery, and so there's an investigation at the plant. And the psychologist comes through and asks them all these questions, like, when did you first menstruate or whatever? Like, what did you dream last night? And they come up with verbatim the same dream. And they're both outsiders in different ways. People have assumptions about each of them which are totally false. People assume she's this conceited ice queen because she's shy and keeps to herself. But the tender way that they kind of delicately approach each other. And here is where the slaughterhouse part makes sense. Mm. Because it's such a striking contrast to the gentle nature and the sweetness and the delicacy of their kind of burgeoning romance against the backdrop of this awful, horrible place that makes it even more powerful, like that they could find love in a place like that. It is, you got to go with the conceit. If you can go with it, it is really lovely and romantic and maybe one of my favorites of the five. Mm.
On Body and Soul, Hungarian drama, the movie's unrated. As I mentioned, it's streaming now on Netflix. The Square, the Swedish satirical film written and directed by Ruben Östlund. What do you think of it, Christy?
So I did not love this the way I loved his previous film, Force Majeure. Ruben Östlund has, like Alex Ross Perry, a propensity for looking at the ugly, truthful side of human nature. And that's what he does here with The Square. It takes place at a museum. Klaes Bang is what? Is he the curator, like the chief curator?
Yes, he's the curator. Yeah.
And there's this new exhibit called The Square. It's just a square outside of the building, and they want the square to be a place of peace and kindness and truth. And the director uses that idea to expose the hypocrisy within the art world, the hypocrisy of all of us as people, that everyone pretends to be so altruistic and on the up and up, and clearly they are not. This movie is really long. It's like 2.5 hours long and does not need to be, but within that long stretch, you have moments of intense and shocking absurdity that just jolt you to life, like this performance I will not tell you about. Also, Elizabeth Moss is very good in this, too.
Yeah, and a very interesting dynamic. It is. It is. Of course, it's all about performance art. And as you think about it, even this film is performance art. So, like, he's taking things down, but then he takes down the taking down of the taking down. Hmm. And it just sort of keeps swirling around. Yeah. You know, and you're sitting there and you think, oh, I kind of like this moment. And then he says, oh, well, now you're one of them for liking this moment. And now you're one of them for judging your liking this moment. And now you're one of them for judging your judging of why. You know, it's interesting.
The Square, Swedish satire, it's rated R at Lemley's Monica Film Center in Santa Monica. The Lebanese drama The Insult is directed by Ziad Doueri, who co-wrote the screenplay. Tim?
Full disclosure, I know Ziad for a long, 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 long time. He used to do a lot of work on Quentin Tarantino movies.
Yeah.
He's his first AC, all the way up through Jackie Brown, a whole bunch of stuff. This movie is very, very, very good. He's Lebanese. And when he went back to Lebanon to start making movies, just some extraordinary stuff. This movie is difficult. It's about these two men, I think a Lebanese Christian and a Palestinian.
Yeah.
There's a moment that happens. One of them is a construction worker, and one of them has a balcony, and some water leaks down on the guy. And the guy and it's illegal. It's done wrongly the way he has the pipe done. He fixes it, and the other guy doesn't like that he fixed it. And then this thing blows up into this wildly out of control insult. It's a thing that the guy says to him about, you know, what he says about Sharon, and that's an insult.
And so does it work both allegorically and for the individual characters?
Very, very directly. There's a court case, and then the lawyers on both sides of the court case. And now we get a little bit interested because one of them is the daughter.
Ah, spoiler.
Yeah.
I went, oh, when I saw that part. So
I don't know. That's why
I didn't know that was coming. I don't know. I this is my least favorite of the five. I found it a little overlong and repeats its moments over and over and over again. It kind of hammers you over the head with its themes, but well acted.
The Insult is the film from Lebanon. It's rated R. You can see it at Lemley's Playhouse 7 Pasadena, as well as several of the other Lemley theaters. A Fantastic Woman, Chilean drama that came out just a couple weeks ago. It's rated R, starring Daniela Vega. What'd you think of this, Christy?
Beautifully acted and very powerful. Daniela Vega she's a trans woman. She plays a trans singer and waitress who is in love with a man who is much older. And when he dies suddenly, everything comes under question as far as her relationship with him and who she really is. And it exposes a lot of people's prejudices, but she withstands it with dignity until she doesn't. And then when she snaps, even that makes sense. Yeah. And it's really beautifully acted.
And of course, Daniela is a trans woman. So she's a trans woman playing a trans woman. And it's just so, 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 so good. And a lot of it has to do with the nature of things in Chile. But I think here, too, anywhere.
Is this one of the front runners? Because I've read a lot about this film, maybe because of the historic nature of it with the trans actor in the film.
Right.
But is this one of the front runners?
I don't know. I would say Loveless, but I can imagine this winning as well. Yeah. What do you think?
It's my top two. This and Loveless are my top two.
A Fantastic Woman is the film, the Chilean drama. It's at Lemley's Playhouse Pasadena, as well as the Lemley's NoHo, the Town Center in Encino, Claremont Lemley's Theater. It's also at the Edwards University Town Center in Irvine and the Landmark in West L.A. Daniela Vega, Francisco Reyes star in the film, directed by and co-written by Sebastian Lelio. The movie is rated R. For our Film Week critics, I'm Larry Mantle, inviting you to join us in person at our big annual event, Theater at Ace Hotel. We're coming up very, very soon. It's coming up next weekend, February 25th. We hope to see you there Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock, Theater at Ace Hotel. Our critics will tell us their favorites from among the Oscar nominees, as well as the nominations they would have liked to have seen, but that weren't chosen by the Academy. Tickets are available at kpcc.org/ Beach in person Sunday afternoon, February 25th, 1 o'clock, the Arides Hotel. Have a wonderful weekend, and we're going to be off Monday for Air Talk because of the holiday. Back with you Tuesday on Air Talk.